Shaddam coughed uneasily, sounds that were not repeated in the translation process. There are so many important issues on Imperial planets, and such a shortage of time in which to address them. I have too little time for friendships I'd like to nurture, such as yours, cousin. What is it you wish to talk with me about? Leto drew a sharp breath, and the hawk-like features on his narrow face darkened. Exalted Emperor Shaddam, we beseech you to grant amnesty to House Vernius and restore them to their rightful place in the Landsraad. The world of Ix is economically vital and must not remain in the hands of the Tleilaxu. They have already destroyed important manufacturing facilities and have curtailed products vital to the security of the Imperium. Then he added, with just another hint of his bluff, we both know what is really going on there, even now. The Tleilaxu connection again, Leto thought. Let's see if I can make him believe I know more than I really do. Standing beside him in the room, Prince Romber fixed him with a wary gaze. I cannot discuss such matters through intermediaries, Shaddam said quickly. Leto's eyes widened at the possible mistake Shaddam had just made. Are you suggesting that the Guild can't be trusted, sire? They haul armies for the Imperium and the Great Houses. They know or suspect battle plans before they are implemented. This Guild link is even more secure than a face-to-face discussion in the Imperial Audience Chamber. But we haven't studied the merits of the matter, Shaddam protested, clearly stalling. He had been watching the rising popularity and influence of Duke Leto Atreides. Did this upstart have connections that extended even to the Spacing Guild? He looked around his empty gardens, wishing Fenring were with him after all. But the ferret-like man was preparing for his journey to Arrakis. Perhaps it was a mistake to save Leto after all. Keeping his phraseology lean and to the point, Leto presented the noble case of the Ixians, asserting that House Vernius had never manufactured forbidden technology. Despite their promises, the Tleilaxu had brought no case and no evidence to the governing body of the Landsraad, and had instead taken matters into their own hands in their greed to acquire the riches of Ix. Based upon conversations he'd had with Romber, Leto provided a value for the fief and how much damage the Tleilaxu had caused. Now, that sounds excessive, Shaddam said, too quickly. Reports from the Bene Tleilax indicate a much lower figure. He's been there himself, Leto thought, and is concealing it. Of course the Tleilaxu would try to establish a low number, sire, in order to reduce reparations, if they are ever forced to pay them. Leto went on to estimate the loss of Ixian life, and even commented on Ilrud's unwarranted blood price for the death of the Lady Shando. Then, in an emotion-filled voice, he conjectured about the desperate plight of Earl Vernius, who remained in hiding on some unknown, distant world. During an extended pause on his end of the conversation, Shaddam seethed. He desperately wondered how much this brash duke truly knew about the Tleilaxu matter. There had been hints, nuances, but was he bluffing? As new emperor, Shaddam needed to do something quickly to keep the situation under control. But he could never afford to allow House Vernius to return to its ancestral home. The Tleilaxu synthetic spice research was vital and not easily moved. The Vernius family was an unfortunate casualty. Shaddam didn't care about his father's stung pride or petty revenge, but those people could not be rescued now, as if nothing had happened. Finally, the emperor cleared his throat and said, "The best we can offer is limited amnesty. Since Romber and Kylia Vernius are in your personal care, Duke Leto, we grant them our full protection and pardon. From this day forth there shall be no price on their heads. They are absolved of any wrongdoing. You have my guarantee on this." Seeing a look of disbelieving exultation on the faces of the two exiled Ixians, Leto said, "Thank you, sire. But what about reparations to the family fortunes?" "No reparations," Shaddam said in a much sterner tone than the guildsman managed to duplicate. and no restoration of House Vernius to its position on Xuta, formerly Ix. Ah, yes, the Bennett Claylocks have in fact presented extensive, conclusive documentation to me, and I am satisfied as to its veracity. For reasons of imperial security, I cannot divulge details. You have taxed my patience enough. Irritated, Leto growled, "Any evidence that is denied scrutiny is no evidence at all, sire. It should be presented before a court." "What about my father and other surviving members of House Vernius?" Romber said into the microphone Leto had been using. "Can he have your amnesty as well, wherever he is? He's not hurting anybody." Shaddam's response, directed at Leto, was swift and stinging, like the bite of a venomous serpent. "I've been lenient with you, cousin, but I caution you not to press your luck. If I weren't so favorably inclined toward you personally, I would never have committed myself by testifying on your behalf, nor would I have granted this impromptu audience today, or the concessions for your friends. Amnesty for the two children, and that is all." Hearing the harsh, relayed words, Leto reeled, but maintained his composure. It was clear he could not push Shaddam further. "We suggest you accept these terms while we remain in a mood to grant them," Shaddam said. "At any moment, additional evidence could be presented to me against House Vernius, causing me to judge them less kindly." Away from the voice pickup, Leto conferred with Romber and Kylea. Reluctantly, the siblings leaned toward acceptance.
"At least we've won a small victory, Leto," Kylea said in her soft voice. "We'll have our lives and our personal freedom, if not our heritage. Besides, living here with you is not so terrible. Like Romber always says, we can make the best of things."
Romber put a hand on his sister's shoulder. "If that's good enough for Kylea, it'll be good enough for me." "The bargain is sealed then," Shaddam said. Their acceptance had been sent through the Guildlink intermediaries. "The official papers will be prepared." Then his words became like razors. "And I expect never to hear of this matter again." Abruptly, the Emperor ended the Guildlink, and the two separated navigators broke their mental contact. Leto drew both Romber and Kylea into a hug, knowing that at last they were both safe. "Only fools leave witnesses," Hasimir Fenring. "I am going to miss Kytane," Fenring said in an odd, somber tone. Within the day, he was scheduled to report to Arrakis as Shaddam's Imperial Observer. Exiled into the desert. But Margit had told him to see the opportunities. Fenring was good at that. Could the Emperor have more in mind than simple punishment? Could this be turned into a powerful position after all? Fenring had grown up at the side of Shaddam, both of them more than 2 decades younger than Fafnir, the former heir apparent to the Golden Lion throne. With an elder crown prince in place and a brood of daughters by his various wives, Elrood had not expected much from the junior prince. And on the quiet suggestion of his Bene Gesserit mother, Fenring had been allowed to attend classes with him. Over the years, Fenring had made himself into an expediter, a person willing to complete necessary tasks for his friend Shaddam, no matter how unpleasant they might be, including the murder of Fafnir. The companions shared many dark secrets, too many for them to split up now without serious repercussions, and both men knew it.
"Shaddam owes me, damn it."
Given time to reconsider, the new emperor would understand that he couldn't afford to have Fenring as an enemy, or even as a disgruntled imperial servant. Before long, Shaddam would summon him back from Arrakis. It was only a matter of time. Somehow he would find a way to turn every circumstance to his advantage. Lady Margit, whom he had married in a simple ceremony 3 days earlier, took command of the sub-chamberlains and unattached servants. Issuing orders with every breath, she created a whirlwind of packing and shipping. As a Bene Gesserit sister, she had few needs and no extravagant tastes. But understanding the importance of trappings and public appearances, she arranged to send a cargo ship full of amenities, including House Carino clothing and furniture, imperial tableware, fine tapestries and linens. Such possessions would increase her husband's standing in Arakeen, where they would set up a private residence, many kilometers from the Harkonnen seat of power in Carthag. This show of independence and luxury would emphasize to the Harkonnen governors and their functionaries the power of Shaddam and his omnipresent, watchful eyes. Smiling, Fenring watched Margot go about her finishing tasks. She was a flow of bright colors and lovely honey-blonde hair, encouraging smiles and sharp words for anyone who moved too slowly. What a magnificent woman! He and his new bride kept such fascinating secrets from each other, and the process of mutual discovery was proving most enjoyable. By nightfall, they would be dispatched to the desert planet, which the natives called Dune. Later in the day, during a relaxed hour in which neither the Emperor nor his lifelong friend would utter the apologies that needed to be said, Fenring sat at the shield ball console, waiting for Padishah Emperor Shaddam IV to make the next move. They sat alone in a plaz-walled retiring room at the top of one of the palace pinnacles. Flitterthopters buzzed by in the distance, higher than ribbon-festooned kites and gleam bubbles. Fenring hummed to himself, though he knew Shaddam hated the mannerism. Finally, the new emperor slid a rod through the shimmering shield at precisely the correct speed. Not too fast and not too slow. The aimed rod engaged a spinning interior disc, causing the black ball in the center of the globe to float into the air. Focusing hard, Shaddam yanked the rod free, and the ball plunked into the number 9 receptacle.
"You've been practicing, sire, Fenring said. "Doesn't an emperor have more pressing duties? But you'll need to do better than that to beat me."
The emperor stared at the rod he had just used, as if it had failed him.
"You want to change sticks, sire?" Fenring offered, in a taunting tone. "Something wrong with that one?"
Shaddam shook his head stubbornly. "I'll stay with this one, Hasimir. This will be our last game for some time." He drew a deep breath, flaring his nostrils. "I told you I could handle things on my own." He fumbled a bit. "But that doesn't mean I no longer value your advice."
"Naturally, sire. That's why you sent me to a dust pit populated by sandworms and unwashed barbarians."
Dispassionately, he stared past the shield ball at Shaddam.
"I think it's a grave mistake, Highness. In these first days of your rule, you will require good, objective counsel more than ever before. You can't handle it alone. And whom can you trust more than me?"
"Well, I handled the Leto Atreides crisis rather well. I alone avoided disaster." Delaying his turn at the shield ball station, Fenring said,
"I agree the result was favorable. But we still haven't learned what he knows about us and the Tleilaxu."
"I didn't want to appear overly worried."
Maybe you're right. But if you solve the problem, then tell me this. If not Leto, who really did fire on the Tleilaxu ships? And how?"
"I'm considering alternatives." Fenring's overlarge eyes flashed.
"Leto is incredibly popular now, perhaps even a threat to your throne one day. Whether he engineered the crisis or not, Duke Atreides has turned it into an undeniable victory for himself and the honor of his house. He overcame an insurmountable obstacle and behaved with marvelous grace. The members of the Landsrad notice things like that."
"Ah, yes, true, true. But nothing to worry about.
I'm not so certain, sire. The discontent among the houses might not have dissipated entirely, as we were led to believe. We do have the Bene Gesserit on our side, thanks to my wife.
Fenring sniffed.
Whom you married at my suggestion, sire? But just because the witches say a thing does not make it true.
And what if the alliance isn't sufficient?
What do you mean?
Shaddam slid back from the game station and impatiently motioned for Fenring to take his turn.
Think about Duke Leto. How unpredictable he is. Maybe he's setting up secret military alliances for an assault on Kaitain. His tremendous acclaim translates into bargaining power for him. And he's obviously ambitious. Leaders of great houses are eager to talk with him now. You, on the other hand, have no such popular basis of support.
I have my Sardaukar.
But creases of doubt crept into the Emperor's face.
Watch your legions to make sure they aren't infiltrated.
I'm going to be away on Arrakis, and I worry about such things. I know you said you could handle it all yourself, and I believe you. I'm just giving you my best advice, as I always have, sire.
I appreciate that, Hasimir. But I cannot believe my cousin Leto created the Highliner Crisis in order to achieve this particular end. It was too clumsy, too risky. He couldn't have known I'd testify for him.
He knew you'd do something, once you learned he had secret information.
Shaddam shook his head.
No. The potential for failure was enormous. He nearly lost his family's entire holdings.
Fenring held out a long finger.
But consider the potential glory he reaped, For proof, just look at what has happened to him in the meantime. I doubt he could have planned it this way, but Leto's a hero now. His people love him. All the nobles admire him. And the Tleilaxu have been made to look like whining fools.
I'd suggest, sire, since you insist on doing this alone, that you keep a careful eye on the ambitions of House Atreides.
Thank you for your advice, Hasimir, Shaddam said, turning back to study the game console. Oh, by the way, did I mention that I'm promoting you?
Fenring gave a quiet snort.
I wouldn't exactly call the Arrakis assignment a promotion.
Imperial Observer doesn't sound terribly exalted, does it?
Shaddam smiled and raised his chin in a very imperial gesture. He had intended to do this all along.
Ah, yes. But how does Count Fenring sound?
Fenring was taken aback. You're making me a count?
Shaddam nodded.
Count Hasimir Fenring, Imperial Observer assigned to Arrakis. Your family fortunes are improving, my friend. Eventually, we'll see about establishing you in the Landsraad.
With a Choam directorship as well?
Shaddam laughed.
All in good time, Hasimir.
That makes Margaret a countess, I presume.
His large eyes glittered as Shaddam nodded to him. He tried to hold his pleasure inside, but the Emperor could see it clearly on his face.
And now I'll tell you why this is such a critically important assignment, for you and for the Imperium. Do you remember a man named Pardet Kynes, the planetologist my father stationed there several years ago?
Of course.
Well, he hasn't been much help lately. A few erratic reports, incomplete and seemingly censored. One of my spies even sent word that Kynes has grown too close to the Freeman, that he may have crossed the line and become one of them. Gone native.
Fenring's eyebrows arched. An imperial servant mixing with that nasty, primitive brood?
I hope not, but I'd like you to uncover the truth. In essence, I'm making you my imperial spice czar, secretly overseeing the melange operations on Arrakis, as well as the progress of our synthetic spice experiments on Zuta. You'll shuttle back and forth between those planets and the Imperial Palace. You will transmit only coded messages and only to me. As the magnitude of the task and its repercussions sank in, Fenring felt a renewed fervor that burned away his discontent.
Yes, he did see the possibilities now. He couldn't wait to tell Margaret. With her Bene Gesserit mind, she would no doubt see additional advantages.
That sounds provocative, sire. A challenge worthy of my particular talents. I might actually enjoy it.
Turning back to the game, Fenring engaged the spinning interior disc and guided the floating shield ball. It dropped into the number 8 receptacle. Dissatisfied, he shook his head.
Too bad, Shaddam said.
With a deft movement, he dropped his final ball into number 10, winning the game. Progress and profit require a substantial investment in personnel, equipment, and capital funding. However, the resource most often overlooked, yet which can provide the greatest payoff, is an investment in time. Dominic Vernius, The Secret Workings of Ix. Nothing left to lose. Nothing left at all. The renegade earl and war hero, once known as Dominic Vernius, was dead, erased from records and removed from the bosom of the Imperium. But the man himself lived on in different guises. He was a person who would never give up. Dominic had once fought for the glory of his emperor. In war, he had killed thousands of enemies with fighter craft and handheld laser guns. He had also felt the blood of his victims up close when he used bladed weapons, or even his bare hands. He fought hard, worked hard, and loved hard. And the payment for his lifetime's investment was dishonor, banishment, the death of his wife, the disgrace of his children. Despite all that, Dominic was a survivor, a man with a purpose. He knew how to bide his time. Though the bitter vulture Elrood was already dead, Dominic felt no glimmer of forgiveness within him. The power of the imperial throne itself had brought about such abuses and such pain. Even the new ruler Shaddam would turn out no better. He had watched Caladan from a distance. Romber and Kylia seemed safe enough. Their sanctuary was holding, even without the charismatic presence of the old duke. He had mourned the death of his friend Paulus Atreides, but he dared not attend the funeral or even send coded messages to the young heir Leto. He had, though, been sorely tempted to arrive on Kytane during the trial by forfeiture. Romber had foolishly left Caladan and come to the imperial court to lend support to his companion, though in doing so he had risked capture and summary execution. If things had gone wrong, Dominic would have gone there and sacrificed himself to buy the life of his son. But that had been unnecessary. Leto had been freed, given amnesty, impossibly forgiven. And so too Romber and Kylia. How had it all come about? Dominic's mind was in a turmoil, and his brow furrowed on his shave-smoothed head. Shaddam himself had saved young Leto. Shaddam Carino IV, son of the despicable Emperor Elrood, who had destroyed House Vernius, had, seemingly on a whim, dismissed the case. Dominic suspected enormous bribes and coercion had gone into that resolution. But he couldn't imagine what a 16-year-old, untried duke could possibly use to blackmail the Emperor of the known universe. One risk, though, Dominic decided he had to take. Against good judgment, but blinded by grief, he had dressed in shabby clothes, tinted his skin a ruddy copper, and traveled alone to Bella Tejus. Before he could go anywhere else, he felt compelled to see where his wife had been slaughtered by Elrood Sardaukar. Using air and ground vehicles, he searched the planet in silence, not daring to ask questions, though many reports hinted at where the massacre had taken place. Finally, he found an unmarked spot where the crops had been leveled, plowed under, and then salted so that nothing would ever grow there again. A manor house had been burned to the ground and then covered with sincrete. Of Shando's grave there was nothing, but he felt her presence. My love has been here. Under the dim double suns, Dominic knelt on the ruined land and wept until he lost all track of time. And when the tears had run out of him, his heart was filled with a great, hard emptiness. Now he was at last ready for the next step. And so Dominic Vernius traveled the backwater worlds of the Imperium, gathering loyal men who had escaped from Ix, men who would prefer to work with him no matter his goals, than drowse through quiet lives on agricultural planets, eking out mundane livings. He rounded up fellow officers who had fought with him during the rebellion on Ikaz, people to whom he owed his life a dozen times over. In searching out these men, he knew he put himself at great peril. But Dominic trusted his former comrades. Despite the large bounty that remained on his head, he knew none of them would be willing to pay the price in conscience of betraying their former commander. Dominic hoped that the overwhelmed new Padishah Emperor Shaddam IV would not think to track down the subtle movements and disappearances of men who had fought under Vernius back when Shaddam had barely been in his teens, and not even the heir apparent to the throne. Back in the days when Crown Prince Fafnir had been first in the line of succession. Many years had passed now, long enough that most of those veterans sat around talking about the glory days, convincing themselves the war and the bloodshed had been more exciting and more glorious than it really was. About a third of them chose not to join him, but the others quietly signed on and awaited further orders. When Shando had gone into hiding, she'd erased all records, changed her name, used unmarked credits to buy a small estate on the gloomy world of Bella Tejus. Her one mistake had been in underestimating the persistence of the Emperor's Sardaukar. Dominic would not make his wife's mistake. For what he had in mind, he would go where no one could see him, a place where he could prey upon the Landsrad and be a thorn in the Emperor's side. That was about the only weapon he had left. Ready to begin his real work, Dominic Vernius took the pilot controls of an unregistered smuggler's craft loaded with a dozen loyal men. These comrades had gathered up hoarded cash and equipment in order to join him in striking a blow for glory and honor, and perhaps vengeance along the way. Then he went to the Vernius family's stockpile of atomics, forbidden weapons, nevertheless held in reserve by every great house of the Landsrad. Absolutely restricted by the Articles of the Great Convention, the Ixian atomics had been secreted away for generations, sealed on the dark side of a moonlet orbiting the fifth planet in the Alcarop system. The Tleilaxu vermin on Ix knew nothing of this. Now Dominic's smuggler ship carried enough doomsday firepower to annihilate a world. "Vengeance is in the hands of the Lord," stated the Orange Catholic Bible. But after what he had gone through, Dominic did not feel terribly religious, nor did he care to be bound by the niceties of law. He was a renegade now, and beyond the touch, or protection, of the legal system. He envisioned himself as the greatest of all smugglers, hiding where no one could find him, yet where he could inflict great economic damage on all the powerhouses that had betrayed him and refused to offer help. With these atomics, he could make his mark on history. Shielded from the outdated weather satellite network maintained by the Guild, Dominic brought his ship and his atomic stockpile down in an uninhabited polar region of the desert planet Arrakis. A brisk, cool wind whipped the ragged uniforms of his men as they stepped onto desolate land. Arrakis, their new base of operations.